Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, May 9th, 2017. This is Joe Covelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. I'm also pleased to be joined by Patrick Ryan and Dan Williams. Hello, gentlemen. Good morning. Welcome to another program.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks.
Good morning, Joe.
Great to have you with us, and we'll also be introducing here very shortly Attorney Wendy Ahrens with Godfrey & Kahn in Madison and Tom Tornstrom, who is the Executive Director at Tri-State Ambulance in La Crosse. Our discussion in just a little bit regards Medicare fraud, whistleblower protection, and how and ways that you can protect your ambulance service with Medicare-type issues with billing. We want to keep you out of trouble, and unfortunately, sometimes there are unintended consequences, so be a good discussion. Wendy recently authored an article. I'd like to mention, too, that EMS Week is coming up here very soon, and it's nationally celebrated. It is May 21 to 27, and your ambulance service might be considering things to do in celebration of National EMS Week. It's always a great opportunity to raise awareness to the ambulance industry and the excellent work that paid professionals and volunteers are doing throughout their state and community with emergency medical services. It also presents an opportunity for recruitment, retention, and awards and recognition. And we hope that you will be celebrating EMS Week within your ambulance service and community sometime that week, May 21 to 27. And I also want to mention that that's also our podcast week, that Tuesday, May 23rd, and we're going to be talking with Dan Williams, and Dan is on with us this morning, but we're also going to invite in Jim Singer. Jim recently retired as the Transportation Director at Flight for Life in Milwaukee, and I've asked Dan and Jim to speak with us about their suggestions in EMS leadership. If it's leadership is something you're interested in, we would like to spotlight that topic and offer years and years of their experience in being an EMS leader and hiring those into EMS leadership positions, offer you some of those recommendations and tidbits to consider along the way in your career growth. So that podcast is going to be Tuesday, May 23, starting at 9 a.m. So gentlemen, this morning's topic, I know Dan, just a few minutes ago before we started, mentioned that you've worked with ambulance services in this area and have some experiences with it. You mentioned it's somewhat of an uphill battle, and I'd like you, Dan, if you don't mind, just elaborating a little bit, kind of a tee-up to what we'll be talking about very soon.
Sure. You know, I think the first enlightening time that it became very obvious to me that people were undereducated was last year at the PSLW conference when I gave a presentation on this topic about the things that you need to know to properly bill for Medicare claims. And it was quite obvious that most people, I would say, unfortunately, 75% or more in the room who really had no idea of a large percentage of the regulations that I was talking about, and even some of the very simple things, you know, just the key things that you need to have in an ambulance report, patient care report, those types of things. So I do believe there's a bit of an uphill battle, and it's, you know, unfortunately, when the Office of Inspector General comes knocking, it's not a situation where you can say where I didn't really know, I didn't understand, I didn't know I had to do this, because it's your job to understand and know these things. So that's not an excuse anymore. I think many years ago it might have been, as people were finally getting educated on some of these things, but not too much anymore. And I'm guessing Wendy will weigh in on a lot of that as she gives her presentation as well. But it was a bit of an eye opener, and so I've, you know, kind of looked at how do we get this word out and what can we do to help folks keep them out of trouble.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dan. That'll be a good conversation. We surely look forward to it. Today's program, again, is dedicated to discussing Medicare fraud and whistleblower protection. Recently, Madison attorney Wendy Ahrens authored an article involving MedStar Ambulance in Massachusetts and a Fraudulent Claims Act violation brought forward by the federal government for fraudulently billing Medicare. The former billing manager was the whistleblower in this case and reported the wrongdoing. Besides discussing the MedStar case, we'll also discuss this morning how to reduce an Ambulance Services Fraudulent Claims Act risk with internal policies and procedure suggestions you should consider in implementing. It's good business practice. In addition to Wendy as our guest this morning, we'll also welcome in Tom Tornstrom. Tom is executive director, like I mentioned earlier, with Tri-State Ambulance in La Crosse. La Crosse does its own ambulance billing for a majority of its work, and Tom can lend some expertise and opinion on some of the suggestions that that they are doing there at their service. Today's program will run about 30 minutes. It's sponsored by SAVIC Buying Group. This is EMS in EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Since 1997, SAVIC Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is SAVIC Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 SAVIC members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Granger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a SAVIC member, or go online to paw.us/SAVIC, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual SAVIC member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join SAVIC today.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you with us. This is Joe Cavelli. We're joined by Dan Williams, Patrick Ryan, and Larry Knuth. Larry, welcome to the program. I saw you just dialed in. Nice to have you with us today. Okay, I thought Larry was with us. Okay, well, we also have with us Tom Tornstrom with Tri-State Ambulance and attorney Wendy Ahrens with Godfrey & Kahn in Madison. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much for both of you joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're very welcome. And Wendy, we appreciated receiving the article that you authored a couple months ago here regarding a case involving MedStar Ambulance and their $12.7 million settlement in the whistleblower Medicare fraud case against them. This was, I'm not sure exactly when this was. I guess it was 2013 as I looked through the article. So fairly recently. Would you mind just giving us a snapshot of this case, what it involved, and what the government maybe was looking at, and kind of where they were at fault? I think it'll give people a good frame of reference, and then we can get into some specific questions.
Sure, absolutely. So as some of your listeners may have heard, earlier this year in January, the Office of Inspector General, that's within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, they settled this QI-TAM, or also known as a whistleblower False Claims Act lawsuit, that was actually brought in 2013, as you mentioned. And it was brought by a whistleblower who was actually a former employee of MedStar Ambulance. The whistleblower alleged that the company, which is located in Massachusetts, fraudulently billed Medicare for ambulance services. And so ultimately, you know, the case did not go to trial. They settled in January. And so there was no actual determination of liability, but MedStar ended up paying a very hefty fine, $12.7 million, to resolve these allegations. And some of these allegations are interesting because they highlight the type of, you know, conduct that OIG is targeting in terms of ambulance service providers. So, for example, one of the allegations included that MedStar was billing for transports that were not medically reasonable and necessary. An example of this was a patient who was transported for dialysis, but the documentation showed that patient was able to walk, you know, wasn't bedridden, and did not require a stretcher. another allegation, you know, consisted of claims that were submitted for services that were billed at higher levels than patients' conditions required. And so one allegation of this is that the ambulance service required advanced life support, but it was actually not required in those instances. And yet another allegation was that the ambulance provider billed for higher levels of services that than were actually provided. So they were providing for transportation of patients for non-Medicare covered services, for example, from a nursing home to a doctor's office for a regular doctor's appointment. So many different types of allegations, you know, billing fraudulently under Medicare can take many different forms, as I'm sure all of you know. And I would say that, you know, this case is unique because of the very high amount of money that was paid by MedStar. In addition, MedStar had to enter into what's called a corporate integrity agreement with the OIG, which is basically an agreement that the ambulance service will agree to certain compliance-related obligations for a period of time, usually about 5 years. And then in exchange, the OIG agrees not to seek the ambulance provider's exclusion from participation in Medicare or Medicaid or other federal health programs.
Wendy, why would this, and I know this is maybe a typical case when you look at Medicare fraud, we hear about these types of cases typically on the East or West Coast. I haven't read too much about Midwest, but not to say it's not, doesn't exist, and unfortunately it might be out there. But with this case, what are some important takeaway points for the ambulance community to identify with?
Sure. I mean, I would say that, you know, you're right, Joe. You know, the bigger settlements come from companies that are on the East and West Coast. There was actually a case in 2015 against a Florida ambulance company where they settled for about $7.5 million. So it's good for your listeners to be aware that, you know, these types of cases are on the rise. They seem to be on the rise. Because the OIG has been focusing more and more on ambulance service providers and, you know, their billing practices. And all of this stems from OIG's, they actually released a detailed report in 2015 about inappropriate payments and questionable billing for Medicare Part B transports. And, you know, one of the recommendations in this report is that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services should increase its monitoring of ambulance billing. So I would say one sort of major takeaway for your listeners is that, you know, they really should, as Dan mentioned earlier, pay very close attention to their billing practices and, you know, make sure all of their T's are crossed and their I's are dotted with respect to those with respect to those practices. I think Dan is right on in saying that, you know, education is key, and the more we can get the word out that, you know, this type of enforcement activity is occurring, and ambulance providers really need to be cognizant of their billing practices, you know, the more and more hopefully people will, you know, make sure that their billing practices are correct and that they're doing all the things they need to be doing in terms of compliance. So those are a couple of big takeaways, certainly.
Yes, definitely. Meeting compliance and requirements. Let's bring Tom Tornstrom in. Tom is with Tri-State Ambulance in La Crosse. Tom, you have an internal billing department that does all the billing for your ambulance services with Tri-State. You cover a large area doing thousands of calls a year. Big operation, a lot of requirements with billing. What are some things that you can suggest to our listeners about handling their billing, especially when it comes to requirements and enforcement with Medicare?
Yeah, good questions. And I also echo what Dan had said earlier. It's really about education. It is a full-time job to keep tabs on the rules and the regulations that go along with the Medicare and the ambulance side of things. We have a full-time manager that's what he does. He oversees our billers. He goes to probably 2 to 3 conferences a year just to learn. He is certified as an ambulance coder as well, which is really important. There is absolutely a lot to it, all the way from the ground up, from the charting of the paramedics and EMTs up through the billers. So a lot to look at. ignorance is not an excuse anymore. People are required. Doesn't matter if you're a municipal service or a private for-profit or a nonprofit, as we are, you are still potentially on the radar for Medicare.
Do you have an audit process, Tom, at your Tri-State that you follow when a run is completed, documentation is completed? Do you have at that point an audit process? It's submitted for claims and processing?
We do, yeah. And fortunately for us, we're part of a larger health system, so it makes it a little easier for us, although it doesn't. Whether we had that or not, we would still do the audit. So proactive audits, 2 to 3 a year, based on different criteria and different Medicare codes that you're billing for, are incredibly important. Typically, we'll do a random sample of anywhere from 10 to 100 reports. And we look at those and we look for errors. And if we see any, we obviously make corrections. There are companies out there that do the audits for you. And if you don't have the internal resources, I would suggest reaching out to someone, a vendor, to do those.
Okay, very good. Wendy, I know as a part of the article that you authored, which we will post with this podcast, and in the article you referenced that ambulance service providers can reduce their risk with the False Claims Act by implementing some clear compliance policies and procedures. You offer some suggestions as to how they can reduce their risk by taking various steps. For example, one of them is develop and implement a whistleblower policy, implement written compliance policies and procedures, and employee standards of conduct. Would you mind elaborating on what you've detailed in your writing on some of these recommendations and steps to follow?
Sure, that's a great question, Joe. And you know, as we talked about before on your show, ambulance service providers can certainly reduce their risk under the False Claims Act and other fraud and abuse laws by implementing or strengthening compliance policies and procedures and really making them authentic to their company so that they don't just sit on a shelf and gather dust. They're actually used. For example, I'm sure Tom's manager has policies and procedures. It sounds like, you know, they go through this proactive audit process 2 to 3 times a year, which is fantastic. And so, you know, making sure that the policies and procedures are current, that they actually work for the company, is a big part of it. I would also mention you touched on the whistleblower policy, which is somewhat of a separate policy. It typically has 3 basic components. And so the whistleblower policy allows for a way for someone to confidentially or anonymously report a fraudulent or questionable billing practice or other type of issue relating to federal legal requirements. Typically, it's done through a hotline, but it could be done perhaps through some other reporting method. And another component of a whistleblower policy is that there's a guarantee of protection for the person who's reporting against any type of retaliation to encourage them to report and, you know, help enable the reporting process. And then, you know, there needs to be an expectation that staff will report internally and in good faith any suspected legal violations. And so that's a whistleblower policy, and that really allows people who potentially, you know, have spotted inaccurate or problematic billing practices to alert the company about that prior to, you know, taking that next step, which is, you know, going to the OIG and reporting it on their own. And other ways where a company can reduce its potential risk under the FCA is, of course, to designate someone who's in charge of compliance, who kind of oversees that role, and who's high enough up in the organization that they, you know, can report up to the people who need to know about it and who can, you know, make the ultimate decision, and also to conduct training and education of the employees. So, you know, that's obviously a critical piece of all of this, and that can be tailored depending on the employees' roles. And as Tom mentioned, obviously, you know, doing internal auditing is very important to make sure that things are being correctly coded and to be able to spot issues and to determine if there's a pattern or maybe it's just, you know, an inadvertent error. And then, of course, to have some process to investigate reports of potential violations and complaints. and then to be able to engage with outside counsel if needed to further investigate any potential violations. This is actually helpful because it keeps that information attorney-client privileged. Once you're engaged with outside counsel, the information that flows to your outside counsel remains subject to the attorney-client privilege protection.
Excellent points. Thank you very much, Wendy. Wendy, while we're at this point, too, would you mind sharing your contact information for those that would like to contact you with additional questions or recommendations?
Sure, absolutely. My direct telephone line is 608-284-2659, and my email is warends, A-R-E-N-D-S, at gklaw.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think you raised some terrific points regarding development of these policies. I don't think these policies just routinely exist out there if you do a Google search. So I think the recommendation is to work with an attorney on this to make sure that you have a policy and procedure that not only meets compliance, but meets the compliance to today's standards and laws. And I appreciate you sharing that information. Tom, I'd like to ask you a question, too. I know a lot of the larger ambulance services, of course, have their own internal billing systems, but we have many ambulance services that work with third-party billers. And ultimately, I would imagine that even though you're working with a third-party biller, as the ambulance entity or enterprise, you're still accountable to some degree with all of this. Would you mind just elaborating on what maybe an ambulance service director can do if they're working with a third-party biller?
Sure. Yeah, actually, good question. In our case, we do have some contractors as well that do the coding for us. We still oversee. Ultimately, I believe the liability comes back to us, though. So it is our responsibility to make sure that through contracts and through language that they are doing their job and that we're, keeping close tabs on it. But ultimately, it does come back to us. We're responsible. So just make sure that if you do contract with a billing agency, they should be certified ambulance coders doing the actual verification in the work. That's a newer certification nationally, probably started 6-7 years ago. And there are probably other varieties of that out there as well. I think the American Ambulance Association also offers a course or two on ambulance coding, but you do want to show some credentials that they are astute to what they're doing and how they're billing.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Patrick, I wanted to make sure we get your comment with this topic too. At Ryan Brothers Ambulance in Madison, you're running several different stations throughout central and southern Wisconsin. A lot of throughput, working with a lot of different staff members as they're completing their run documentation, ultimately getting to the billing process. Do you have some recommendations on this topic?
I would say just making sure you devote specific training for the proper way to write a PCR so that we can be knowledgeable of the things that we need to look for, and then also have a process of how, because we do get, we all get asked at times to provide transportation when it's clearly not medically necessary, but how we handle that to demonstrate that as such so that we can get the proper denial and go through that process. I think that's another kind of caveat that kind of comes into play at times that we don't talk a lot about. But so I think the keys are making sure that the frontline people are aware of the ways that the process is handled once it leaves their hand. I think too, an understanding of the entire process, I think, is important as well. I think to think that an EMT just writes a report and that's the end of it, really is only one piece of the puzzle. So having that interaction too for billing to be able to go back to the frontline EMTs and to be able to get further information, clarification, and then feedback too to what the billers are seeing, I think is very important.
Yes, so there's that comment and two-way communication back to the person that wrote the documentation.
Correct.
Yeah, audit trail, definitely important. Thank you for sharing those good points. Dan, I know you had mentioned too that you have work experience in this consulting with ambulance services, sometimes an uphill battle to get people to identify with the importance that this offers and kind of stay on current law. Are there other recommendations that you have as you've worked in this area?
Well, I would agree with everything that's been said so far, but it really does come back to the individual service. I think there's a lot of people who believe too that if you have a billing service do your billing for you, that you completely absolve yourself from any problems. and that clearly isn't the case. You know, they are working off the information that you have provided. If you don't give them great information, they're going to bill with several assumptions, and that those assumptions may not always be accurate. And again, they're not purposely doing that. It's just that, you know, it's the old adage of garbage in, garbage out. If you don't give good information, you're not going to have a clean claim, which then sets you up for a possible fraudulent claim. And of course, once a fraudulent claim is identified, everything you do after that is fraudulent as well. So, you know, there's just so many idiosyncrasies to all of this billing process information that it's hard for people to be experts and understand all these things because it's very, very detailed what you have to know.
That's an excellent takeaway point, definitely. Wendy, I know we have probably about 5 minutes or so, and I sure want to offer time to you to offer any wrap-up comments on this. This is a very good discussion, an excellent topic. We're trying to keep people out of trouble, unintended consequences, what you don't know could hurt you. Those are kind of the themes here, and to do the right thing. But what are some closing comments that you would like to offer to our audience?
Sure. I think, you know, Tom, Dan, and Patrick all offered some really interesting and spot-on insights. And, you know, one thing Dan was saying before the show started was that, you know, his folks need to really know and understand Chapter 10 of the, you know, Medicare Benefits Manual relating to ambulance service providers. And I would say that's obviously key. I would say there's also a lot of guidance out there for people who are looking to develop a compliance plan. There may be some examples on the internet, which are always helpful starting points in case people are, you know, thinking to themselves, geez, how do I develop a compliance policy or a whistleblower policy? I don't even know where to start. There's definitely a lot of resources on the web. And in addition, the OIG has actually published specific compliance guidance for ambulance service providers. And this was back in 2003, but it's still available through the HHS's website on the OIG's page. And it kind of walks through the elements that should be included in a compliance policy. And it also identifies the risk areas from OIG's perspective, which includes, you know, as we've already talked about, issues relating to medical necessity, such as upcoding, non-emergency transports, and scheduled and unscheduled transports. And it also talks about risk areas relating to inadequate documentation, so incorrect coding, origin destination requirements, and issues relating to coordination between multiple payers. So all these areas are on the government's radar, and you know, these are areas in which, you know, you should, your listeners definitely should pay attention and try and strengthen their policies around billing, as well as their sort of general compliance policies and procedures. Because these types of actions, again, are, you know, coming up more and more. We're seeing them in the news, and, you know, there's not a lot that you can do, even if you have a third-party biller. As Dan mentioned and Patrick and Tom, you know, a third-party biller doesn't absolve you of your responsibility under the law. And so you can't, you know, point a finger and say, well, they were responsible, you know, for doing all this. It all comes back to you, the ambulance service provider. So definitely be aware of that if you are working with a third-party biller.
Very good. Thank you, Wendy. Tom, did you have some comments in closing?
Just a piece of practical advice, as Wendy had mentioned as well. If you are a new ambulance director or an old ambulance director, read Chapter 10 of the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual. Read it annually. If you don't know much about the billing side of things, that will help you, and it will generate the questions that you need to ask either to your billers or to your contracting vendor.
Excellent. Very good, Tom Tornstrom and Wendy Ahrens. Thank you very much for being a part of the program today, for talking about something that a lot of people maybe don't maybe pay as much attention to as they probably should. It's obviously an important part of the business. It's the revenue stream. And you need to make sure that your I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And unfortunately, you know, there's no unintended consequences. But thank you very much for offering your expertise in this area. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay, you're very welcome. Have a good day. Patrick and Dan, thank you for your comments as well. This was a great conversation, an excellent topic. We want to keep people out of trouble, and we want to make sure EMS stays in a very good light within our communities, and we don't have any types of issues out there.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome. Great show.
Yep, great show. Well, I would like to remind everybody again, the next EMS Live in Wisconsin program is Tuesday, May 23, starting at 9 a.m. Again, we'll be discussing EMS leadership, things to consider to advance your career in EMS. Our guests will be Dan Williams and Jim Singer. Both Dan and Jim have combined over 70 years of experience as EMS directors and folks in the industry. Dan recently retiring from Emergency Services of Door County, and Jim recently retiring from Flight for Life in Milwaukee. We look forward to their expertise and sharing their words of wisdom to those that are looking to advance their career in this wonderful industry. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. If you'd like to suggest a topic to us, you can surely reach out to us. Email is admin at paw.us. We'd look forward to hearing from you. Today's program was recorded and is available on demand for playback from the PAW homepage at paw.us. On behalf of our guests and co-hosts, this is Joe Cavelli. On behalf of the Professional Ambulance of Association of Wisconsin, thank you very much for listening today. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.